In November of 2023, Carlo interviewed filmmaker Eduardo Sanchez, co-creator of the Blair Witch Project, for an episode of his podcast The Movie Loot on found footage films. The next year, their footage was found.
You got 5 seconds to tell me where you buried the loot.
I don't know if anybody's got the loot.
I'm setting up a guy who's incredibly important to us who's going to tell me where the loot is.
Where's the loot?
This is The Movie Loot, formerly Thief's Monthly Movie Loot. Just a small, quiet podcast, much like a small, quiet podcast anywhere. No more than 20 listeners have laid their roots here over 4 years ago, many of whom remain, either on this streaming platform or in the ones below. There are an unusually high number of episodes delayed here, most of whom were supposed to come out in December. This one's episode 96. Yet no one in the film Twitter community seems to recall anything unusual about this time, to us anyway. Yet legend tells a different story. One whose evidence is all around us, etched in digital code. Hello, looters. Welcome to The Movie Loot. And today we have found a very special episode for you that we've called the Found Footage Loot. And for that, I'm honored and thrilled to be joined by co-writer and co-director of the Blair Witch Project, filmmaker Eduardo Sanchez. Glad to have you here, Eduardo.
Hey, nice to be here, Carlo.
Eduardo, you're from Cuba. I'm from Puerto Rico, so we have a bit of a Caribbean connection here.
Absolutely, you know, man, we're brothers.
Yeah, you know.
We're cousins, at least, maybe.
De un pájaro las dos alas.
Sí. I was just in Puerto Rico last year or the year before for the first time. Last year. Yeah, doing, I did an episode of Fantasy Island. I loved it. I hope to be back soon. Yeah.
I need to check that show.
I mean, it's, you know, it's not for everybody. It's definitely, you know, different than the original one, but it's Puerto Rico. It's beautiful, you know, and all the actors are great, and you know, so it's cool. But you know,
that's good to know. I'm glad that you enjoy your time here. But like I said, Eduardo is a writer, producer, director, and editor, mostly known for creating 1999's The Blair Witch Project, along with Daniel Myrick. I'm gonna start asking. Was filmmaking something that you always felt you'd end up doing, or was it something that you developed as you were growing up?
You know, I mean, I always loved movies. You know, my dad was, you know, we came from Cuba, and my dad didn't speak English, so he loved movies, so he would take me to these movies, and there's this theater called the Ontario that had that's Spanish subtitles or dubbed in Spanish, and they would play the most random movies, and he would take me all the time. He just loved going to the movies, so I got kind of, you know, into his, you know, just to be with him, and just, you know, I just loved movies, and we used to love watching James Bond movies, and then I, you know, very interested in the making of movies and stuff, but, you know, especially after Star Wars came out, and, you know, just I was interested in how they did effects and stuff. So, you know, it was a hobby, but I never thought, you know, I grew up in, you know, in Maryland, you know, there's no filmmaking here. I mean, you know, John Waters, I guess, was making, I don't know if back then he was making films yet, but this was like the 80s, early 80s. So, yeah, maybe. But, you know, I didn't know anybody who made films. So I was just like, you know, it's such a dream. And then I took a high school class, 11th, a TV production high school class in 11th grade. And from the first moment, the teacher was like, hey, you know, it's not just, you know, movies, it's TV, it's, you know, audio, it's, you know, music, it's all these different careers, all these different positions. And I was like, oh my God, that's cool. And I was like, and then from that moment on, it was like, I was just 100% wanting, you know, wanting to be a filmmaker at that point.
I always like to ask people, was there like a film that you can pinpoint? Like you said, when you watched it, you said, this is what I want to do with my life.
You know, Star Wars, and then, you know, anything from Spielberg, Raiders of the Lost Ark, and, you know, E.T. and Close Encounters and Jaws, you know, and Star Wars really was the thing that, because it was like, it was everywhere. Like even if you hadn't seen the movie, you were aware of Star Wars. And it got me interested in how they did the special effects and, you know, the script writing and the sound stages and the sets and all the, you know, all the cool stuff. And, you know, I started reading as many film books as I could find. But, you know, again, it was like a hobby, or so it was just an interest. And then I started taking it seriously later, you know, in high school a little bit. But yeah, Star Wars, I mean, you know, I think everybody, I'm in my mid-50s, so I think everybody, most filmmakers of my generation were inspired, you know, one way or another by, you know, Star Wars, just because it was just such a crazy thing that came out of nowhere. You were like, what? It was like, you know, it was just an alien thing, you know, like some, you know, it was just amazing. So, and you look back on it now, even now, and you're like, man, this movie came out of like what?
Yeah.
You know, that, and, you know, how do they, you know, there's those stories of like how they, you know, they, the people making the movie were like, what the hell are we doing? What is this? You know, people of this big, you know, hairy,
creatures.
Creature and these robot guys and what the hell's going on here? But it was just, you know, it was such a vision, you know? So, yeah. Again, thanks, George Lucas. And you know, as you can see from behind me, I've paid him enough. I've given him enough in merchandising to probably, you know, buy him a car or something. So, but yeah, man, it's definitely took over my life when I was a little kid.
I know many people, like I said, have been inspired by George Lucas and Steven Spielberg. I mean, they're seminal for filmmakers.
Yeah,
So then you went on to study film, and that's where you met Daniel, right?
Yeah, yeah. Went to University of Central Florida, and I went to Montgomery College to study television for 3 years there. And I did, and this was like, we did a movie and we shot it on VHS. you know, because it was just
what we used back then.
That's what we used. You know, it was like, you know, late 80s, and you know, we were like, you know, this is before digital, anything, you know, digital came out, video or anything. So it was like nobody was shooting movie on video. So, and there's no way we were gonna shoot it on film. We had absolutely no money. I think the budget was like $250 to buy the VHS tapes. But we shot it on video, and I wrote and I directed it and I edited it, and you know, it was just a learning experience just doing. I was like 19 years old, and you know, doing a feature, and you know, it was, you know, whatever. It was I learned a lot, let's say. So then I was like, okay, I try to get into film school, and I learned about UCF had a film program, and they were only accepting 30 people. So I applied, and I luckily got in, and so I moved to Orlando, and that's where, you know, I met Dan. As we were in production class together, and the first moment I saw his films, I was like, wow, this guy knows what he's doing, you know. So, and he was digging what I was doing, and you know, we kind of came together as collaborators naturally.
That's great. And I heard in an interview where you said that choosing Blair Witch Project, that you had like a bunch of projects in line, but that choosing Blair Witch Project was something practical in terms of the money that you had at the moment. Was the found footage element always a part of the recipe?
Yes. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, Blair Witch really was you know, we had other things going, but, you know, nothing was really happening, especially for me. I mean, Dan was still, he was in Orlando, he was editing and he was still in the business. I was like driving a truck around, you know, delivering blueprints. So I had nothing going. So we started and yeah, it was the initial idea was like, okay, a film crew goes, you know, is doing a documentary about some kind of supernatural thing, some kind of folklore, a witch or, you know, a dragon. We had no idea what it was, just something scary in the woods. And they get lost and they disappear and they're never found again. And then the initial idea was like 20 years later, they find the footage and it's 60 millimeter because we thought that, you know, it'd be cooler to be unearthing reels of film and reels of audio tape, you know, and putting them all together. And, you know, so that, you know, that was kind of like the dream. And then once we got the money in 97, we were like, all right, you know, how are we going to go back to the 70s? And it's just, you know what I'm saying? It becomes a period piece and, you know, it just became really, and then the film would have cost, you know, just the film stock alone would have cost, you know, $20,000. So we switched to, you know, we had a 60 millimeter black and white for her, for Heather, because that she was making the film. And then we had a behind the scenes and we just shot it on Hi-8, which was just the consumer grade video that was around in 1994. It was like the best consumer grade video you could get back in when they, you know, when supposedly this happened. And that's, you know, we just rolled that and, you know, and that was it. But yeah, it was the found footage was part of, like, we didn't call it found footage, but that whole aspect of finding the footage came about very early.
I mean, you pretty much sparked that subgenre into life. I mean, you weren't the first, but you gave it pretty much a newfound life.
Yeah.
Two of the main examples that you hear mentioned before Blair Witch Project are Cannibal Holocaust and The Last Broadcast. Had you seen those films before making the Blair Witch?
No, I hadn't seen either of them. The Last Broadcast, the first time I saw anything about The Last Broadcast was in early 98. We were starting to edit the movie. We had shot it a few months earlier, and our friend Mike, one of the producers, Mike Manello, read something in a magazine, Wired, I think, about this movie, Last Broadcast, and, you know, they shot it digitally and this, and they're going to try to, you know, whatever. And he was like, hey, this the premise of this sounds a lot like Blair Witch. So Dan, I had just moved to Orlando. I was sleeping on the floor of his living room on a, you know, air mattress, and starting to edit the movie. And then we found the trailer at lastbroadcast.com or whatever. I'm sure they had a website, and we look at the trailer and I just remember, like, looking at Dan, and, you know, it's just like our hearts sunk. It was just like, oh my God, because we waited 5 years, 5 or 6 years to get it going. Since we came up with the idea in 91, we didn't start, you know, really doing it until 96, didn't shoot it till 97. So it was like, you know, God, man, I mean, what are the chances that somebody has the idea? So, and then, you know, later on, around September of that year, because, you know, they were still editing it, I guess. They released it, you know, they were doing the film festival run, and somebody I knew worked at the NZN, and they had gotten a submission. So we watched it, and, you know, it was, you know, we liked it. I mean, you know, it was eerily, like, very similar to Blair Witch. It's just crazy.
I haven't seen it.
Yeah, I know. And then, you know, then we entered Sundance, you know, and then we got accepted in November, and, you know, but I met the guys that did Last Broadcast at Sundance, and, you know, we talked a lot, and, you know, just kind of the coincidence. And I know that there's been some rumor, people have said that, you know, we copied them. It's like, you know, whatever. Yeah, just looking at the dates, there's no way we copied them. And then Cannibal Holocaust was a crazy surprise for us, because I think Dan and I, we had never seen it. And somebody on the, it was after Sundance, and somebody on the Blair Witch site said, hey, have you seen a movie called Cannibal Holocaust? And we were like, no. So they sent us a VHS and we watched it. And, you know, have you seen Cannibal Holocaust?
Yeah, I've seen that one. Yeah.
It's a rough movie, but it's exactly the movie that we set out to make with Blair Witch, because Blair Witch wasn't, the original wasn't just the found footage. It was the found footage and a documentary, just like Cannibal Holocaust. You know what I mean? Like that they went back to the editing room, and that was a lot of what we were going to do. We're going to, you know, examine the footage. And then at the end, we decided to take all the documentary stuff out and just do the stuff in the woods. But we were just like, again, you know, kind of amazed because of, you know, just the effects and, like, the, you know, killing of the animals is just, you know, it's horrible. Yeah. It's not a, you know, and it was banned in the United States, and that's why we never saw it, you know, luckily, you know, because, and Dan and I, again, were like, man, if we had seen this movie when we were kids, or when we were teenagers, we would have never done Blair Witch, because we would have been like, oh, that's just like Cannibal Holocaust, and we would have just got on to the next idea, you know, so we were luckily ignorant, you know, but again,
oh,
you know,
I'm so glad you did.
Just yeah, me too. I wouldn't be talking to you if we hadn't done that, but we hadn't seen it. And but it's just you know, it's just amazing that this, you know, kind of like, really, like, I guess War of the Worlds with Orson Welles was kind of the first. It wasn't found footage, but it was almost like found audio, you know, like, you know, a broadcast, you know, not the same, but something that pretended to be real.
Exactly.
And you know, there was some stuff in the 70s, you know, like The Legend of Boggy Creek and that show In Search Of, which kind of inspired Dan and me to come up with Blair Witch, you know, to come up with the whole found footage thing. But yeah, it was just a coincidence that we had not seen that movie. And again, it was like, it was eerily like it's just crazy how similar the ideas were, you know?
You know, I haven't seen the last broadcast, and I didn't even know how similar they were, just as you were mentioning. But the reason why I'm bringing it up is because I find it interesting how, even though there were seeds, as you might say, in that subgenre, you really did something great. I mean, I'm pretty sure you realized the impact of the film because you felt it of their project. And it's really, really interesting how that pretty much blew up. I should have started with this. I'm a big fan of the film. I saw it at theaters back in 1999.
Thanks, man.
And I walked out. I used to camp when I was a teenager. So you really found ways to tap into those fears and what it is, what it means to be alone in the woods. And it really, it was really quite something. I bought it on VHS. Then I bought the DVD. I think I had it on Blu-ray. I'm a huge fan of it. So,
well, cool, man. Cool. Yeah, no, I mean, you know, it was as much a surprise to us as it was to everybody else. You know, I mean, we knew we had this cool idea. And everybody we told it to was like, oh, my God, you know, when are you going to make that? And, you know, it got into Sundance and, when we just made it and we got the right actors and there's a lot of, you know, lucky things. But, yeah, it's a weird movie because, like, it's just like it's hard to connect yourself sometimes, connect myself to the movie because it's like such a big thing and you kind of have to, like, keep a little distance, you know, from it. I just did a convention in Manchester, England last week, the weekend before last, and it was amazing. I mean, I sat there for 2 days and people, you know, people came to me they paid for my autograph and my photo and just the stories. And, you know, you try to talk to everybody and, you know, it was just like touched so many people and like really like kind of sparked like the imaginations of a lot of people, I think, which I think is the most important legacy of the film, because I have there's a lot of people who come and they're like, oh, I got into filmmaking because of you, or I got into horror movies because of Blair Witch and this and that. So, you know, I just feel really honored and really blessed that I was a part of it. But yeah, man, it's amazing just, you know, what happened with it. And still, you know, 25 years later, I'm still talking to people about it, you know. So it's been a blessing for me.
Yeah. And I certainly want to make sure to talk about some of your other films. But I really want to mention some of the things that I like about Blair Witch Project. And as much as I like what I mentioned, I mean, I really love what you did in the woods and the way that you instilled that dread and that fear of what it means to be alone in the woods and you don't know what really is out there. But one of my favorite parts of the film is the setup. That first act, the setup in the town with the people talking about whatever they're, you know, the different rusting bar, the coffin rock and all that. I think that does such a perfect job of setting everything up that you're going to watch later. And there are so many things that I think are maybe fortuitous. But for example, one of the things that I really love so much is the woman that is telling the story.
Oh, yeah.
The little girl covers her mouth when she starts to talk about the Blair Witch. I think that's brilliant. And that's
the script. It's like, how do you, you know, if you wrote that in a script, you know, imagine trying to direct a little girl. Okay, so when she says Blair Witch, you put your hand over. Yeah, I mean, it's impossible.
That's brilliant.
And that's, you know, again, like what I was just talking about is that there were so many amazing moments in that movie, you know, that just came about, you know, from just the setup, you know, just letting the actors be out there. And you know, it was so surprising to us as the filmmakers, you know, and we really wrote the movie, you know, in the editing room, you know. We were amazed by that, and we were amazed by so many moments in the footage, you know, and we definitely, you know, we had a script with no dialogue, and we had a story, you know, we had all the beats, but, you know, just what Heather and Mike and Josh kind of added and just blew us away. There's so many scenes where we're just sitting there, oh my God, you know, but yeah, man, there's so much luck.
I read something. And you obviously can tell me if that's real because I don't remember exactly where I heard it. But in the scene where they run out of the tent, it's just the camera. Was it supposed to be like a figure? One of you dressed like a figure or something?
Yeah. We dressed this guy named Dave Poole, who is a friend of my sister's and my cousin. And we were like, hey, man, we need somebody to dress up like a ghost and, you know, run. And he was like, yeah, sure. He was kind of a dude who would do whatever. So we just basically put like a, you know, white long johns, you know, white leg long johns over his jeans or whatever, and then put white socks over his shoes and then, you know, socks and then, a, you know, stockings. So it was all white, but it looked like, you know, crap. So our, you know, Dan and I was thinking, okay, so as Heather runs out, she goes, what the fuck is that? And she turns the camera and you'll see like a kind of a ghostly figure running because he was just running next to them. But nothing came out on the film. And we actually even, you know, we went back and reshot that, you know, like what you see in the movie isn't what isn't the initial, you know, part of them leaving, because the camera, the 60 millimeter camera, something went wrong with it. And we had to actually reshoot that part. And then, you know, because there, you know, there is video and film, we knew we had cut points, you know what I'm saying? So Dan and I, you know, that night we reshot the scene and everything. And then we put, you know, put the actors, you guys should go back in the tent because we were trying to keep them isolated. And Dan and I went out and with Neil, our cinematographer, and we just faked that, you know, that thing and then turned to the side and we had Dave run next to us. And we even did it in different, we were like, okay, start far away and then move. We did it like three different levels and nothing came out, man. Nothing came out. And, you know, we were like, you know, in the documentary part, we were going to say, you know, look at, you know, if you examine frame, you know, A41 or whatever you call it, some number in the fifth hour of footage, you'll see that there's this weird, you know, the ghostly image of a, you know, and just have the, and we were going to have these still frames of like this, you know, really creepy stuff, like a ghost, like a running ghost, you know, and, you know, it didn't come out, man. And we were, you know, we're actually thinking of going, you know, we were going to go back and reshoot it for us, you know, we were thinking about it and stuff, but, you know, it was just, we were just too busy and it never got around to it. But like, it was so disappointing to us, you know, and but it was good because it made her say, you know, it made her have that reaction because she had no idea that we were going to put a guy out there. And they literally like, you know, woke up with little kids outside the tent, yeah, you know, playing like, what the hell is this? And then they ran out and stuff. And so, you know, so we got this really genuine reaction from her that, you know, was worth him going out there. And he actually, David, actually, we had to cross, you know, the log that they crossed. We had to cross it in the middle of the night. Yeah. And he fell into the,
into the creek.
Yeah. And it was cold. So it was just, you know, the whole thing was like, oh, my God, we made, you know, Dave dressed for nothing. But he definitely did elicit that reaction, you know, of Heather. So, you know, it was well worth it.
I think the film works
so
much better with you not necessarily seeing what's out there.
Yes.
It's, you know, all the better horror directors say it's better to just what you can imagine than what you can see.
Absolutely. And honestly, I mean, I tell this to everybody, but like if we had had more money, we would have fucked the movie up. You know, we would have added some shit to it that, you know, especially to the end. Like if we had money, you would have seen something at the end and we would have been, you know, anyway. But luckily, you know, we didn't have any money. So
you said you were inspired by Spielberg and just look what happened with Jaws. I mean,
exactly. Like, you know, Jaws is like the perfect monster movie, you know. Yeah. But at the end, you know, you want to see the monster. You wanted to see that shark, you know.
Yeah.
And we just couldn't afford to show you anything.
But one of the things that we have to bring it up when we're talking about the Blair Witch Project is the marketing. I mean, the marketing to that film is just so unique. And I think that when you talk about the film, you have to talk about the marketing. It's just like such a great compliment, everything that you did to, and I don't know if this was your whole intention to trick people that this was, that this was real. It was quite something. When did the marketing became its own thing?
Well, you know, we shot the movie in at the end of 97, you know, October of 97, and then we started editing in January of 98, and we were, we had an investor tape that was basically, before we even hired Mike, Josh, and Heather, we had these three, a woman and two guys, play, you know, and we called them like Jane, Bill, and Bob or something, I don't know, it was just really generic names, and, you know, we made this thing of just fake, like this footage, these filmmakers went to the school and they disappeared and now their footage is found. It was all just, you know, newsreel stuff. And it was just stuff that we shot in the woods. And it was, you know, it was just to get in, you know, the investors interested. So we sent that over to, we got it into John Pearson's hands. John Pearson is this guy that helped the early careers of Spike Lee and Kevin Smith and Richard Linklater and, you know, Michael Moore. You know, he's just like this independent film guru. And we sent, we had, Dan got a hold of him and he worked with him and he gave him the tape, you know, so John loved it and he put it on his show. He had a show called Split Screen on Bravo and he put it on the last episode of the season. And he paid us up front for that one, and he said, "I'm going to pay you up front. I'll pay you for this one, and I'll pay you up front for the do a segment with, once you shoot the footage with, for the, you know, for the season premiere of the next year in 1998." So, long story short, sorry about that. In April, I think, of 98, Split Screen premieres. And we had gotten a lot of traffic, just a lot of attention from the earlier one, like at the end of the season. There's a lot of people like, oh, on their page, what is the, you know, what's going on? But, you know, it was still very, not that much buzz was happening. And then once we got into, we actually shot the film, you know, their website and the season premiere, their website blew up. You know, it was just like so many people. And John was like, "Man, you guys got to do your own website because you're drowning my website." So we, you know, I had a little bit of website experience from working with my cousins and in my previous job, and so I built this website, you know, blairwitch.com, and you know, it was just kind of like the whole idea was like, you know, okay, Heather's mom got the footage from the police after a year, and the police couldn't prove anything. There, you know, there's no foul play. You know, they have no idea. There's no nothing. You know, there's no leads. So they gave the footage back to Heather's mom. Heather's mom hired us, Hacks and Films, to make this documentary. So I was like, if that were really real, how would the website look? So I just started putting shit up, man, and started making up mythology. You know, we had like the basics of mythology. Ben Rock and Dan and Greg and I had kind of come up with the mythology. But a lot of the details, you know, we were like, you know, we didn't have any details. So we went through, and with the help of Mike Manello, we just went through and, you know, named all the kids that, you know, Rustin Parr killed and just all the kind of stupid things. And that's honestly, that's when we came up with the idea for why Mike was standing in the corner. So, because in the Sundance cut, there's no Mike standing in the corner, you know. But so during my, you know, just brainstorming and trying to flesh out the Rustin Parr story, I was like, oh yeah, you know, I'm pretty sure it was my idea, but I have no idea. The ownership of ideas is so blurred, you know?
Yeah.
But I think it was like, Rustin Parr made him stand in the corner a week while he killed the other kid. You know, to me, it's just like, that's just horrifying. Like, so we came up with an explanation. Then when we went to reshoot the new endings. We shot the interviews, or the interview that we used of the guy saying, "Oh yeah, Rustin Parr used to make the kids stand in the corner." We thought, man, that's going to be really great for some people who like pay attention to that part at the end. But it was crazy because it's come so early in the movie, and if you're not paying attention, you completely miss it. So, you know, it was just something we're like, man, I don't think many people are going to get it, but the people that do get it, it's going to be a nice little moment. You know what I mean? So we put the website up. This was before Sundance or whatever, and we just started getting a ton of traffic. This was in 98, and people were just loving it. We had a discussion board, and it was just like questions from all over the world. It's the first time that we really kind of started seeing like the power of the internet, you know, because it was like very small, but it was, you know, you could reach people everywhere. And that's where the kind of the whole thing of the Blair Witch started. We had fans in Australia and Germany and Japan and, you know, the UK and some in South America, like in Brazil. And it was just crazy, you know, so, and all over the United States, you know, so that really kind of energized us. And we were like, wow, this is, you know, a cool idea. At least people are digging it, and they haven't even seen the movie yet, you know. So we kept editing the movie. And then that was how the website was born. And then we got into Sundance. There was a guy named Jeff Johnson who, like right before Sundance, I think probably like October, even before I think we even knew we were in Sundance, he lived in Los Angeles, and he called up, you know, a morning radio show, like a very popular one, and said, "Have you guys seen this, you know, BlairWitch.com or whatever? This is a movie that's coming out, and it's going to Sundance, you know, whatever." I don't know what he said, but he had the guys went on, and they actually surfed the website, you know, on air. And that, in that day, the website went down. Like, we had so many people. And that was the first time that, like, a lot of LA people, a lot of the business realized what it was, like saw this and was like, wow, what is this? It's a movie and it's coming out. And that's when really we started getting a lot of attention. And then we got into Sundance, and we went into Sundance with a lot of momentum because of the website and just because of the stuff that we had been kind of developing, and then luckily again, part of the marketing also was Artisan. They bought the movie, and there was a guy there named John Hageman and a woman named Emra Jones who really got the movie and really kind of understood what was needed. And especially John Hageman, I think he was the one responsible for, for kind of selling the movie to the other executives. We got to buy this. We got to buy this right now. And he knew the movie, he sent us these trailers and we were like, oh my God, dude, we don't have any notes. This is exactly the way this movie should be marketed. These little short 30-second bursts of what the hell is this? And just yelling and screaming and then the news, that crazy music. And, so it was, it was really great because they were, really supportive and they really took a lot of our ideas. And then that's when Curse of the Blair Witch, the documentary, came out. Artisan was like, we have an hour on the Sci-Fi Channel. Do you guys have any ideas? And we were like, yeah, we have all this footage that we cut out of the movie, all this documentary stuff that's just going to waste. So we took that and we put it again, another thing of just luck. The thing that we abandoned during the edit, we used to market the movie. You know what I mean? It's just, it's just crazy the things that happen with Blair Witch. We just stumbled upon stuff, And then, that became very popular and it got really big. It was one of the highest rated shows at Sci-Fi Channel up to that time. And that really made people think that it was real. And then that's what fueled, the first couple weekends and the rest is history. But yeah, it was very much, a partnership that started with the website. And then we're the ones that did the Stickman logo. We had the Stickman logo on the poster. We got a frame grab of Heather with her little hat because we knew that scene was going to be, iconic. At least we thought it was going to be. And that was the one that we put on the poster. There's a Sundance poster that we designed, that we had a company design from our ideas. So we brought a lot of stuff. We did the missing post, the missing flyers and this and that. So, it was just it was a lot of fun, man. We were creating an In Search of episode, or we were creating the Legend of Boggy Creek, by ourselves, and we were creating all the footage and everything. And it was just so much fun and so much creativity. And it was, we had no money, but it was a great time in our lives,
Were you ever arrested and questioned by the Maryland police?
No. I mean, fortunately, no. But I think the closest we got was the signs for the Burkittsville signs were being stolen. So that was some criminal activity. But before the movie came out, there was a detective that called us and I think he talked to Dan and he was like, hey, I went over to Montgomery College and I looked for the records of the students and they never went there. And, what the hell's going on? I couldn't find anything in the newspapers about this. And because, back then you couldn't just look up on the internet. You had to go to the library or, look up the newspapers, and all that stuff. So he's like, I just spent, a couple of days or whatever it was researching this. And I just want to, call you guys and what is going on. And Dan was like, ah, dude, it's not real. It's a movie. And we made it all up. And again, there was this thing of a lot of people have asked me about were people angry when they found out it was not real? I think there must have been some people that were angry, but most of the time people kind of got in on the joke. There's so many people that were like, oh, that looks so good. I'm going to tell my wife or I'm going to tell my mom or my, my cousin or, whatever, my son about this or my brother about and take them to the movies. There's so many stories of people going, oh, man, I fooled my sister. I took her to the movies and I told her it was real. And I watched it with her and she freaked out. And luckily a lot of people, instead of getting angry, they kind of became part of the game, luckily for us.
I think you did an exceptional job with that. All that partnership and that machinery that you just described that put everything going. I think you all did a great job. I remember I graduated from college in 1999, so I'm pretty sure I got into that website sometimes in one of my computer labs or something.
Yeah.
and I dived in and saw all the clippings and all that.
Yeah. It was you know, again, it was very creative and we were just making it up as we went, you know, so.
That's definitely fun. And we have to talk what happened after Blair Witch, because I saw an interview you did for Mark Searby and Screen Jabber, where you spoke about the whole Blair Witch experience, which you said it was a great thing and how it gave you a career and opened so many doors for you. But you also went to describe the whole aftermath of it as, quote unquote, an explosion that just kind of went off in our faces, a conveyor belt of slaps to the face, and just craziness. You said you guys you were ready for the success. How hard was it for you as a filmmaker to get out of that conveyor belt and perhaps that cloud of expectations and whatnot?
Yes. I mean, you know, I'm still under the cloud, you know, of expectations in my own head, you know. It has it was just like, you know, like the when we went and did Blair Witch, like the biggest movie, because, you know, we were making this movie for like $20,000. The only other movies that we could compare that were made for that little was Clerks, El Mariachi. You know, there was everything else was made, you know, 500,000. We're like 500,000. Sure, we wish we had 500,000. So there was no, you know, these movies were made, you know, there's only a few movies that were made for so little budget that actually did something and you heard of. So we were like, you know, oh my God, man, if we get El Mariachi, you know, get some screen, if we get mixed in the theaters. But we never for a second thought that it was going to go in the theaters. We were like, this is going to be, you know, if we can get a video deal and if we can get like on HBO, you know, HBO was like, you know, the big home. It was just obviously before streaming. And we were like, yeah, man, you know, and all we wanted to do was get enough money to make another, you know, to pay the investors back and then make another movie, you know, maybe make a little money, you know. So there was nothing to compare Blair Witch to. Like, we were just like, our expectations were so low before the movie. And we, you know, we knew we had a cool idea, but we were like, you know, we had, you know, Dan and I and both and Greg and all of us had been through the heartache of making a movie and not selling it. And, you know, it's very difficult, but you learn a lot, you know, and we were not ready to, like, you know, get our hopes up that much. You know what I mean? But then we started hearing things about, like, oh my, the website, and when we got into, you know, we did a screening at the Enzian, and one of the producers that ended up being Kevin Fox, that ended up being one of the executive producers, was like, he was in the screening and he was like, oh my God, you guys are going to go to Sundance and you're going to make a bunch of money. And we were like, the hell are you talking about? So we had this momentum, but we had no idea, like, of what it was going to do, you know? So it, you know, blows up and it makes all this money, and all of a sudden we have money and we are, you know, doing interviews all over the world, and we're on the covers of magazines, and there's interviews, you know, the actors are in the Tonight Show, and, you know, just Jay Leno and, like, David Letterman, I think they were on, you know, all these freaking, you know, just craziness, man. And I see, you know, Heather and all the on TV, the music team, you know, the MTV Movie Awards, and it was just, you know, crazy. And then that's when the whole thing of, like, okay, now what? You know, now what do we do? And, you know, we had made some good money from Blair Witch. You know, it was very lucrative, obviously. So, like, most, like, I remember I met Darren Aronofsky at Cannes in, like, I guess April or of 1998 and 99, like right before the movie came out in the United States. And he had done Pi with Artisan, and we had, like, followed Pi very closely because we were like, you know, it's a great movie, but it's a very limited commercial kind of window movie. You know, like, it's at least it just has very limited commercial possibilities. Mm-hmm. And they, you know, they made like $3 million with that movie. So we were like, oh my God, you know, so that's one of the reasons that we really loved, you know, the Artisan, you know. But I remember at Cannes him telling me, like, dude, you know, it's just, it's, you know, and like the businesses, man, they keep money away from you. You got to fight them. You know, the movie made $3 million and he still owed them money, you know, just crazy stuff like that. And he was like, oh man, you know, but get ready for that. And I was like, oh my God, you know, what's going to happen to us? So we made a ton of money. And, you know, it just, the relationship with Artisan changed a little, you know, they definitely became more of like a regular distributor where, like, they keep the filmmakers, you know, arm's length, especially financially. And, you know, we tried to make another movie and, you know, it was just, there was Dan and I were having issues as partners. Like the Blair Witch changed everybody, you know, changed me. And there was this level, like I remember, and I've talked about this before, but like our agents one time, we were in San Francisco doing like, I don't know why, they took us to San Francisco for some reason to do some kind of powwow about what we were going to do or whatever. It was, I don't know what the hell it was, dude. It was a weird weekend. And we were just sitting in a restaurant and we're just talking. And one of the agents was like, you know, I still haven't figured out which one of you is the genius. And, you know, so, I mean, you know, that kind of stuff. And we already knew that, you know, like Dan and I would have conversations about like, man, I feel like I feel like Ringo sometimes, you know, not to like, you know, not to denigrate Ringo.
Because yeah, he's the greatest
rock drummer. I mean, his Beatles would not be the same without Ringo. But, you know, imagine being with, you know, Lennon and McCartney and then George Harrison. You know, that guy had to be kind of a strong guy, man, to like, you know. So anyway, we felt like Ringo, like we weren't contributing enough, you know, whatever. But I think we all, you know, as artists, you go through that. You're always doubting yourself. And I think that's what kind of makes you, you know, become a better artist or whatever. But, you know, it was just tough because now we were like kind of competing with each other, you know, and we just started drifting apart. And Paxton eventually just kind of almost everybody kind of went their separate ways. And I, you know, we got a lot of, you know, offers to do other movies. But again, the curse, you know, we had made some money, so we didn't have to work. You know, we didn't have to take the crappy, you know, horror movies that they were sending us. So, you know, it was just, you know, it was just a weird time. And we made a lot of bad decisions and we, you know, squandered a lot of opportunities. But at the same time, you know, like I went from indie films to television directing, and I have a, you know, pretty good career as a television director, and yeah. I'm about to start doing features again because of my television work. So I've been very lucky to have this, you know, long career. And so far, knock on wood, I've been very fortunate. So and I always think like, I mean, you know, like, look, they offered us the Exorcist, the prequel, you know, the one that was made twice and it was kind of bad both times.
Yeah.
They sent us that script, the first one. And we were like, I mean, Exorcist, we love that. It's our favorite horror movie, most scariest horror movie ever. And we were like, well, you know, can you give us a few months and we're going to, you know, work on the script? They're like, no, you know, you got to start shooting in like a month and a half. Like they're already on location. Like we already have. And the script, you know, I mean, if you see that movie, that script was, and I mean, it's just, it wasn't like, it had some issues, let's just say. And, you know, they offered us a crazy amount of money, you know, Dan and I were like, dude, if we do this, you know, we sell out so quickly, you know. But again, we didn't have to sell out. You know, we didn't have, but if we had not made any money, we might have done, you know, Exorcist, the prequel, and, you know, whatever, and it would have been a different thing. So, you know, we definitely made mistakes, and you can go back and say, oh, we should have done this and that. But you never know. Like, you know, I would have maybe ended up in LA and doing some bad things and, you know, just gotten with the wrong people. You know what I mean? It's like this business can go dark very quickly, you know? So again, I'm just very happy to be where I am. And, you know, it's like I've, you know, the Blair Witch has given me a good life and it continues to give me a good life. And, you know, I'm so appreciative of that. So, but man, it was a crazy time. It was just, and even now, man, like, you know, I'm supposed to do a feature, you know, I'm doing a feature this spring. Can't really say too much about it, but, you know, it's a great script. We're still working on a couple of things in it. As always, you always continue to work on the script all the time. But the big thing kind of shadow hanging over me is this thing of like, oh, you know, the expectations, you know what I mean? Of like, you know, you're expected to do this and that. And you know how it is. You know, you never, in indie movies, you're rolling the dice, you know? So there's this, you know, all this pressure. And even now, you know, so even now I'm still kind of feeling this, the shadow of the Blair Witch, but I wouldn't be here. I wouldn't have gotten this opportunity if it wasn't for Blair Witch. So you got to take the good with the bad and, you know, you got to, you know, step up and do it and just be brave and just, you know, power through it and hopefully, you know, make it to the other side, you know, and make a good film.
Yeah.
But yeah, there's still the shadow of the Blair Witch is definitely still, you know, overall my whole life, you know.
I think it's one of those things that you have to learn how to twist it on your favor. And like you said, use those expectations and those things to maybe fuel you and motivate you to keep doing great films.
Yeah, that's the thing. You got to take the fear and you got to, you know, channel it into something else. And you can feel sorry for yourself for a little while, but, you know, you got to get up and do it. So I think that that's the big thing, is that, like, you know, it does motivate you. It does motivate you to make, you know, good work. So.
And Blair Witch Project, like I said a couple of minutes ago, it's credited as sparking this found footage craze that overtook horror during the 2000s and still. But you got Paranormal Activity, you got Lake Bungo, you got Cloverfield, As Above, So Below. Even George Romero dipped his toes in it with, I think it was Diary of the Dead. I haven't seen it.
Yeah.
How do you feel about this trend that your film sparked?
I mean, you know, it's flattering, you know, it's kind of annoying sometimes. No, it's cool. I mean, you know, I always tell people, it's like, I kind of feel a little bit of how, like, George Romero must have felt when all those zombie movies and shows and Walking Dead and everything, and, you know, that he basically invented, you know what I mean? I mean, you know, it was, there's some really great movies, and I really do love the way that, like, you know, the new filmmakers and older filmmakers kind of took it and made it their own. And even now, you know, there's the found footage, just, you know, it's not as popular as it was, but there's still some good movies, found footage movies coming out.
Yeah.
And, you know, you gotta look for them. But I love, like, the new directions that the other, you know, these other filmmakers are taking it. And, you know, and just the idea that our film inspired them is just, you know, really humbling. You know, it's just like, I never, you know, again, we talked about Star Wars at the beginning of the interview. It's like, I never thought I would be associated with a movie that, like, was inspiring people, especially, you know, 25 years later. Yeah. So I feel really lucky, you know, that I was a part of it. And I'm just like, I just love it. I really, there was a point there, you know, where everybody was like, there was a lot of found footage stuff, and it was just like, oh my God. But you're right, man. There's so many good found footage movies. And they continue to surprise you, you know, at least they continue to surprise me. And, you know, it's cool to be associated with, you know, with that kind of, you know, movement or whatever subgenre or whatever. So again, there's so many aspects of Blair Witch that I just have to, like, step back and, like, just pretend I'm not part of it, because it is sometimes, like, a little too much, you know what I mean? And you can kind of get, again, you can get heavy really quickly. But again, it was just an amazing thing. And again, I've said it a million times, but I feel, like, so fortunate that I was part of this, you know, team that put this thing together, you know, because it was a true collaboration, you know, from producers and actors and, you know, everybody, the set, this, you know, the art department and, you know, editing and just the website and even the artists and the distributor, you know, there was this major collaboration that we kind of got a great energy and, like, really took advantage of it, you know?
Yeah, and we're going to talk in a while about other found footage films that we love. But you were talking a bit ago about how you might have drifted a bit from Dan, from all the pressure of and now you've done 5 films after counting Blair Witch Project, all of which you've worked with Jamie Nash as a writer. Mm-hmm. So there's obviously a tight partnership there with Jamie. Do you feel that this collaboration is something that can continue to work towards more films?
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think that, you know, Jamie is just one of the, you know, better writers I know. And also, he lives here in Maryland. He's very accessible. And we've known each other for so long. And he's one of these writers that just, like, it's like a machine, you know? So he's actually doing something for us right now that my partner Greg is working on. And I've been executive producing some movies here in Frederick, where I live, some low budget horror movies. And we actually have shot 2 of his scripts. He actually directed one of the movies. It continues. I mean, you know, I just love his ideas and I love his attitude. And he's always, you know, he's always coming up with crazy stuff. I'm always amazed by how fast he is. And he's a good collaborator. Like, he, you know, you give him notes and he just kind of, he pushes back sometimes if he feels that it's important, but he knows the process of notes. And yeah, man, I mean, there's so much stuff that hopefully, you know, we're going to keep doing together. And the next movie was not written by Jamie. And it was like the first time that I'm doing, like, a film that was brought to me, you know, a script that was brought to me. So just, you know, and for me, it's just like, I definitely miss the group, because I had the same producers and, you know, for all of my movies. And, you know, there was definitely, like, this family So it's a little scary going in, you know, being, you know, going into another thing. But that's just the, you know, that's the way it is. So for me, it's like I'm just using it as a learning experience. And the script is very solid, and it seems, you know, that the that everybody is, you know, in it for the right reasons. So, but yeah, man, I mean, it's definitely something that I'd like to, you know, what I would love to do is to have do a TV show, and so that, you know, I could bring not only Jamie but other writers that I love and other directors that I love, and, you know, work on something together like that, because there's no room, there's not much room for that in features. And I think television, that's why we love, my partner Gregor, you know, have been trying to get a TV show going for many years now. We've been close a couple of times, but haven't gotten the green light. But, you know, it's definitely something, because that's really, for me, like the greatest thing of just like bringing all this talent together, because there's so much talent out there. And a lot of people don't get their opportunity, and, you know, there's so much underuse, you know, of talent out there, especially in this business. And, you know, it would be great to work with some of those people, you know.
Yeah, definitely. And I want to talk a bit about your other films. Mm-hmm. Because I managed to catch up with all of them in this last couple of weeks. Mm-hmm. And it's something really interesting, because you seem to really tap into some common fears and things that people are usually scared of. At least I identify with that, like alien abductions, mm-hmm. or Bigfoot, or demon possessions, or stuff like that. And I thought it was really interesting. I really liked all of them.
Oh, thank you, man.
I wanna share specific things that I really like about this film, because Altered deals with this four friends that managed to capture an alien in an attempt to get payback for being abducted 15 years ago. Mm-hmm. And what I like about it is that even though you have an alien and there's gore, I mean, you have a guy with his guts the hanging out.
Yes.
The main focus of the film is really the trauma that these characters are dealing with. Yeah. I mean, I don't know why, but I kept thinking, I mean, you could swap alien abduction with child abuse.
Absolutely.
And it could be the same film. And I thought it was really interesting. Lovely Molly. I really enjoy how you draw these parallels between what is addiction, a mental illness, and a demonic possession. And that's one that really, really hit close to me, that parallels with mental illness and how we deal with it. There's this line where Tim, the main character, says, I love her, but I don't know how to help her. And I've been there. I know I've been there.
Yeah.
And that scene where the sister has the 911 dial on the phone and she's just hesitating.
Yeah. What's she doing? Yeah. No, it was. Thanks, man. I mean, it was, there's a lot of kind of heartbreaking little beats in there. And it was a very weird movie for me, because I wrote it, and Jamie came up with this initial idea, and I wrote the script pretty much by myself. And then I directed and I edited. So it was, by the end, man, I was about to kill myself. It was very dark time. And, but you know, Gretchen's performance, you know, it's just, so lucky to have worked with, you know, Johnny Lewis and Alexandra Holden. I mean, you know, there's just a great cast. And so it was, but that movie took a lot out of me, man.
Yeah. I heard an interview where you said about that. It's ironic that you said something took over me.
Yeah.
And it's ironic to say that about a film about demonic possession.
Yes. Yeah. It's not lost on me. Like, I think that, you know, again, it even happened after Blair Witch. Like, you know, when you are, and I think it's something that us, at least for me as a horror filmmaker, like, you got to kind of keep it, you know, you got to keep it real sometimes, because you're dealing with a lot of dark stuff. And I think that, you know, and I'm not overly religious, and, you know, I'm very spiritual. I think there is obviously a lot of stuff, and there's a lot of science that we don't understand. And I feel like I live near some Civil War battlefields, where like a lot of people died very quickly, you know, like over a couple of days, like thousands of people died in these fields. And there is, you know, there is a residual energy there. Like, there is something about that ground. And so I believe that there's something else out there, you know what I'm saying? And I feel that, like, you know, that's what I like to kind of, you know, examine in my films, is like, just, is there, you know, is there another, you know, is there an afterlife? And just like, you know, what makes us human, like the things that, that we're scared about. And you're right. Like I, like my movies deal with a lot of things that I fear, you know, in my life. Like I, you know, the alien thing was something that as a kid, I was scared of, and Bigfoot, and also, you know, Loving Molly to me was like my homage, you know, in whatever way to The Exorcist, because that, you know, that movie really, you know, kind of knocked me out and like just kind of destroyed me, but did so many interesting things to my brain, you know, but yeah, man, you know, that's for me, kind of that's what it's all about, you know.
Yeah, you became an icon in horror with the Blair Witch Project, and you have directed four other films within the genre, and yet you don't necessarily identify yourself as a horror director, at least from what I've heard on other interviews, or at least you don't see yourself as such. So I want to give a chance for our listeners to get to know a bit more about your tastes. So we're going to do a quick fire. I'm going to mention a genre, and you tell me your favorite film in that genre, or a film you love, okay?
Sure.
Action.
Raiders of the Lost Ark.
It's a good one.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess that one. I mean, but, you know, James Cameron, pretty much any of James Cameron's movies. The Road Warrior, you know.
Okay, like, yeah. Great one.
Yeah, there's so many. I mean, you know, and a lot of the Bourne Identity movies, like when, you know, there's just, you know, and the James Bond movies, like I think that I love the action. And even like Evil Dead 2, to me, is kind of an action movie. Yeah. It's action horror comedy, and really my favorite like kind of subgenre of horror is that. And you know, and again, man, like when you said that, I wasn't a, you know, I never thought myself as a horror filmmaker. Really, action and comedy is kind of where I, you know, I thought that like I have so many ideas of like action horror stuff, you know, action comedy stuff, you know, like that's really, it was such a weird, you know, subgenre. But yeah, that's really my wheelhouse. So yeah, man, I mean, and those movies, I mean, obviously Raiders is like the perfect film. And, you know, even the new one, I really love the new one, the new Indiana Jones movie. I thought they did a great job, you know.
How about comedy?
Comedy. This is Spinal Tap.
Ah, yeah. This goes to 11.
Yeah, it goes to 11. You know, Airplane, Naked Gun. And, you know, there's like romantic comedies that I like. Like, I love Notting Hill. And even like Love Actually, even though there's, you know, my wife and I always watch Love Actually during Christmas, you know, just wrapping gifts or whatever. But God, I'm missing some. I mean, a lot of the Monty Python stuff. I used to love, you know, Saturday Night Live. I mean, it's, you know, the Pink Panther movies with Peter Sellers. Yeah, man. I mean, you know, you know, I always felt like after Blair Witch, Dan and I wrote a comedy, and we were gonna, that was our next film, and we never got to make
it.
Yeah, Heart of Love, and it was just like a stupid. It was just going to be the silliest movie, like just Airplane meets, you know, Monty Python, and, you know, just really silly stuff and trying to like offend everybody, and a lot of, you know, shit jokes, and, you know, but, you know, so that's kind of my thing. You know, I kind of Blazing Saddles is a lot of the Mel Brooks stuff. You know, there's so much good stuff, man. I'm like, at a loss of like, but there's so much. I mean, again, there's so many good films out there. You know, they're inspired.
I love musicals. You like musicals?
Musicals. I love musicals. West Side Story, the old one. I haven't even seen the Spielberg one yet. I'm so behind on my movies. There's so many movies, like big movies, that I haven't seen yet. But the original one, you know, the Robert Wise with Natalie Wood, and just like, just unbelievable. Like, just, you know, just the, oh my, yeah, the Puerto Ricans. It's just, you know, it was just. Enrico Marino, and yeah, exactly, just like, and then Moulin Rouge, like I thought that movie is
my still favorite.
One of my favorites, like just such a work of genius, and like, again, like kind of like a Star Wars, like where the hell did that movie come from, you know, and just, it was, you know, so many smart decisions. And Grease, I love Grease.
Grease, yeah.
Oh my, I mean, one of my favorite movies as a kid was Grease. I mean, I watched it so many times. So yeah, I think those three probably musically are my favorite musicals.
Okay. Sci-fi?
Sci-fi is also something I love. I love, you know, 2001: A Space Odyssey, you know, just, you know, it's Kubrick, of course. Alien and Aliens. I loved, what was the one with, Children of Men, you know, which is great sci-fi. Yeah. I love stuff that I loved, like dark stuff like that. And the Star Trek movies, and the show. I've seen every single Star Trek episode of every show, almost 900 episodes. it's like a whole thing that, you know, that I did just recently. And, so many good horror, sci-fi movies out there. THX 1138, George Lucas's first movie, just so much cool stuff out there.
Yeah, there's a lot, really.
And did you see The Creator?
Haven't seen it, but I like that guy.
It was really talented filmmaker. And that was one of my favorite movies of this year, for sure. I was really surprised by how much I liked it. But it was just, I love, again, like, kind of mixing of the genre, science fiction and action, especially. Blade Runner is one of my, top 10 for sure. Yeah, man. I really do love sci-fi. Like, you remember Outland with Sean Connery?
Yeah.
It was like, even that, just, I don't know. I just love that. I mean, I read a lot of sci-fi. It's definitely probably my favorite genre,
That's great. We talk a lot about Blair Witch. We talk about your career. We talk about fun footage. So before heading into our fun footage loot, where we're going to talk about a bit about our favorite fun footage, let's search around the woods a bit more and play a little game I've called Where Was the Found Footage Found? What do you say?
Sure.
What I'm going to do is I'm going to read a description of where the footage on certain fun footage films was found. It has to guess what fun footage film I'm talking about. So, for example, if I were to say the footage was found in the woods near Burkittsville, Maryland, what found footage film would I be talking about?
Blair Witch Project.
Exactly. You heard of that one, right?
Yeah,
I heard it's good.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's see. First one, retrieved by the Department of Defense at Incident Site US 447, area formerly known as Central Park.
What the hell was that? I can't remember that one. Was it
at Central Park?
That was Cloverfield, right?
Cloverfield, you got it. Yeah,
I found it. I mean, has a very unique name.
Yeah. Okay. The other one, the body cameras of two LAPD officers.
Oh, God, what the hell is that called? God, my brain is it's been a long day. End of Watch, right?
End of Watch, yeah.
Yes.
Michael Pitt.
Good one.
Recovered from a shrine in a riverbank in the Amazon River.
Is that...
Talked about it.
Yeah, Cannibal Holocaust, right?
Cannibal Holocaust, you got it.
Man.
Okay. Over.
I'm doing a lot better than I thought I was going to do.
Over 800 tapes recovered by the police from a house in a New York City I can't name because it is part of the title.
The Poughkeepsie tapes, right?
Yeah, you got it. Okay, found in the basement of the newly purchased home of the in-laws of wedding videographer Gavin York.
Paranormal Activity?
No.
Wait a second. I should know this.
You should know it because you were in it.
Oh, yes. Butterfly Effect, right?
Butterfly Kisses.
Yeah, Butterfly Kisses. Yes.
Okay.
All right. I didn't know you were going to go that deep, man. All right.
I saw that one a couple of years
ago. I love the clues you gave me. Come on, dummy.
Confiscated by the U.S. government from various security cameras around Maryland.
The Bay, right?
The Bay. And let's end it with this one. Recovered thanks to the families of Micah Sloat and Katie Featherstone and the San Diego Police Department.
Paranormal Activity.
You got it. You did great, man. You found that.
Yeah. Man, well, I mean, you gave me some clues, but...
But we're not out of the woods yet, because it's time for our found footage loot, our final section of the show. The moment where we will take turns in sharing our top five found footage films, or just five found footage films you want to put the spotlight on.
Yeah.
So what do you say? What's your number five?
The first of the five is the one that I loved most recently, Host. Just really amazing. And, you know, done during COVID. And I know the, I got to know the Jed Shepard, the writer, a lot, you know, very well. And he's a really good guy, very talented guy. And, you know, it's such a, you know, it's like, hey, we're all locked in our houses. Let's make a movie. It's just such a fun and, you know, an amazing idea. And then the execution was perfect.
Okay. I've heard good things about it. I need to watch it.
Yeah. You need to watch it, man, for sure.
But my number five, I wanted to talk about it earlier, but I knew I was going to talk about it now. But it's Exist from 2014. I really enjoyed it.
Thanks, man.
I was talking about all the different things that I liked about all your other films, and I thought this one was so visceral. It had me on edge all the time. I thought the use of the found footage element was really, really well done. And you really got some creepy images and visuals. The guy in the bike, that moment was quite something.
Go ahead.
No, I just wanted to say that I love how you emulate. I don't know if that was your goal, but how you emulated the iconic Bigfoot video as a guy is running on the bike and you see the shadowy figure through the woods. It was great, man.
Yeah, well, thanks, man. I mean, you know, it was, you know, again, like we said earlier, Bigfoot is like one of my favorite monster. I was a kid in the 70s and Bigfoot was huge and it just scared the crap out of me. And I've always felt like there hasn't really been a good Bigfoot, you know, in film, like even the good Bigfoot movies, sometimes the like Legend of Boggy Creek, they didn't even have a Bigfoot suit, you know? So, I felt that like the creature hadn't been given its proper like respect on film. And that was kind of my main goal is like, I want this thing to look real and I want this thing to feel like it's right on you. And I wanted to feel like what I felt when I was a kid. So yeah, man, thanks for bringing it up. Yeah, it was a lot of fun to do. And, you know, and it was just, you know, a good dream come true to make a Bigfoot movie, you know?
Yeah, I really enjoyed it. So what's your number four?
Have you seen one called Europa Report?
I've heard about it, but I haven't seen it.
They spent a little bit of money. It's science fiction. It's just really well done. It like doesn't cheat, you know. I think a lot of science fiction movies cheat where like the science, like, you know, again, it's just the way it is, but there's no sound in space. You know what I mean? Like, and in Star Wars and Star Trek, you kind of accept it because, you know, it's whatever, but I love that this one, like, there's not supposed to be any sound, there's no sound, and just kind of those details, and also just really well acted, and like kind of like a little haunted house, you know, monster kind of thing in space, and I thought it was really well done.
I've heard good things about it, so yeah, definitely. I think I have it on my watch list on Letterboxd, so I'm pretty sure I will get to it at some point.
Yeah.
My number four is Lake Mungo from 2008.
Yeah.
I thought it was very, very effective. The way they weave this story about this girl that drowns and these videos that she leaves. The visuals, and when they go back and they replay those tapes and you see things that you didn't really notice were there. I thought it was really effective and it got to me.
Yeah, I loved it as well. I got to know the DP. John Brawley, he was the DP on Queen of the South first season, and him and I are still friends, and hopefully he'll DP one of my movies soon. But the reason I loved it is that it had a little bit, it was kind of like our original vision for Blair Witch a little bit, where, you know, we were going to mix the documentary, and it was just a really well done documentary that happens to be fake, you know? I really love that one as well.
And how about your number three?
Paranormal Activity. I know Oren, like, you know, him and I hooked up after, you know, when the movie blew up, and he's a good guy, and he definitely like was like, oh my God, I wouldn't have a career if it wasn't for you. And, you know, I loved Blair Witch and I studied it, and, you know, you can tell that they're very similar films, you know, and I just thought it was genius. Like Like after Blair Witch, you know, we sat around and we were like, man, you could do a movie like this about a haunted house, about this, about whatever. But we felt like it can't come from us because we don't want to get stuck in this. Because, yeah, you know, it's like at that point, it was a gimmick. You know, it worked because our movie was found footage. But like to do another one, we've been like, So that's why it took me, you know, 12 years to go back 13 years to do another found footage movie, you know, because I just kind of needed a little more separation from it. But I was like, I knew that there was going to be a great found footage, you know, horror, haunted house movie.
Yeah.
And he just, you know, just nailed it. And one of the few movies that really kind of freaked me out, you know what I mean?
I need to see it. That's a big blind spot in terms of horror, because I haven't got to it, but I need to get to it.
You know what's interesting is, like, I was...
You're giving me homework with yours.
Yeah, no, man, you got to get on that, man. But if you look at, like, structurally, Blair Witch with Paranormal Activity, there's a lot of things that line up. Like, he kind of, like, said, all right, now this moment happens here in Blair Witch. Now I need the kind of a similar thing here. Like, he really mapped it out really well. And obviously, you know, he did his own thing for sure. But it was just interesting that he used kind of our blueprint to just, you know, to help him come up with the, you know, with the beats and stuff. And it's really well done, man.
I'm definitely going to check it out. My number three, we talked about it also a while ago, and it's Cloverfield from 2008. I caught that one on TV one day. I was flipping channels, and I think it was starting. And I thought it was pretty good. Intense from all the chaos in the
first
act. Some good scares, solid performances. And one of the things about found footage films is that you have to make people believe that this person is going to be holding this camera all the time, and it's going to keep recording. Yeah. And I thought they handled that premise pretty well right until the very end, and it with a dark ending to beat. So I thought it was pretty good.
Yeah, I mean, that was the movie that, you know, kind of put the stamp of approval on found footage, because there hadn't been really any big hits of found footage until that one. And then that opened the door for Paranormal Activity and, you know, Wreck and all the others. But I feel that, like, it was just really well done. And you're right. And look, man, you know, found footage is, again, the same thing why we didn't do a found footage movie for a long time, because it's a little bit silly that you don't throw the camera at the monster and run the other way. You know what I mean? Like, and in Blair Witch, like, we came up with the idea that, you know, they're lost and they're using the cameras, especially Heather, as like a filter to, like, just, you know, and Josh brings it up. He's like, oh, I can see why you're videotaping. It kind of gives you, you know, it filters it. But again, you know, how many batteries did they have out there? And, you know, and the same thing with Cloverfield and all these found footage. Like, you have to have a reason why they're, you know, videotaping. Yep. And it is silly sometimes, and you got to push it, whatever. But, you know, that if he throws the camera away, you don't have a movie.
Yeah,
exactly. So you got to keep the camera there, and, you know, and sometimes it is dumb, but, you know, it's just one of the pitfalls of the genre that you got to accept, you know?
It's one of those things that we have to roll with. Yeah, definitely. Yeah. So what's your number two?
These are in no particular order, but Wreck, I like Wreck a lot. I thought that was really well done. I feel like the Spanish of it helped. Like, I always feel that, like, and even though, you know, I'm not a great Spanish speaker, but I understand about 90% of it. But I mean, you know, the Spanish from Spain is sometimes a little, you know, it's a little hard to follow sometimes, you know, but I just love, like, you know, movies with subtitles, I feel like have a different kind of feel, you know. That's why foreign films, you know, have a, you know, cause you're reading most of the time. And I think that just the act of reading starts playing with your kind of the idea of, like, that you're reading a book, and it, you know, just makes things more interesting. And I thought that movie really benefited from being, you know, in Spanish. And also, it's just a creepy movie, really well done, you know, good characters, you know, creepy ending, like, you know, just keeps you kind of interested. It was, you know, it's really well done, man.
Yeah, I know, because it's my number two as well. So, yeah.
There you go.
I definitely agree. We had one overlap. That's great. I agree. I think there's a great setup there. The way they start this with this documentary or something that she's recording with the fire people.
Yeah.
How they end up trapping this house and you don't really know what's going on. And then
they seal the house off and the building off. And it's really good elevation. You know,
this apartment going wrong. Yeah. Yeah. It's really, and like you said, the ending is really creepy, and it really sticks with you. So yeah, definitely my number two.
Yeah.
How about your number
one? Well, again, this is not my number one. It's just one of the five that I want to talk about. And it's a little weird because I have a film in it, but VHS 2, I think, is just a, you know, really good example of, you know, of how to put an anthology together. And also just, I don't know, again, something about those movies just really it's like a good ride from beginning to end. And most anthology movies, there's always something that you don't like, or that something, you know, and I'm not saying that VHS 2 is a perfect film, but I just think that has all so many different little flavors and they all work. And again, I'm talking about my film too, that, you know, I did with Greg Hale. And again, Jamie Nash wrote it. And especially, you know, the Safe Haven, the one that Timo and was it Gareth or it was Timo and
it's Gareth Evans, I think, and now that's another one. But
yeah, but the one about, you know, in Indonesia and like the about the cult, and I mean, you know, yeah. it's just a classic freaking short film, you know. And again, and for me, it was also, I, you know, Greg and I, you know, were asked to do it, and you know, we were like, all right, we were the oldest ones, we're like the grandfathers of film footage, and
we don't want it to suck.
Yeah, exactly. We don't want our film to be the worst one. And I feel that, like, we had a really good time, like, just being with, hanging out with the other, you know, when we only met, Adam and Simon and Jason, you know, because they were the only ones in the United States. And then the other ones we met just through phone calls or whatever, but just really good people. And, like, I just loved, like, the energy. It was just really cool, like, meeting other fans of Blair Witch and of found footage in general. And like, I love like what they were doing and just the differences between our films and the things that were similar. And, you know, just a cool ride, man. It was a cool ride. And I mean, all the VHS movies are pretty decent, you know? But I think, you know, and also I'm like, you know, I had one of my movies in there, so I'm a little bit, you know, I'm not exactly a fair judge, but I don't know. I just think it's an interesting film for sure. And a good like kind of found footage anthology, you know?
I think it's a good moment to ask, is that how Adam came out to direct Blair Witch, the sequel?
No, I mean, it was, we met and we hung out at a couple of different festivals and, you know, him and Simon, and we knew that they were, you know, huge Blair Witch fans. But that didn't happen until a little bit later. And honestly, we were really happy when they said, hey, we're doing the next Blair Witch movie, because they were like very afraid that we were going to like want to kill them. They were very nervous. Because, you know, they're good guys and, you know, I understand, you know, but we were like very much like, no, man, do what you got to do. And we were very happy that they picked Adam and Simon, because I couldn't imagine, like, you know, two better filmmakers, horror filmmakers, I knew they respected the material, you know.
Yeah.
And that's all you ask, you know, that's all you can ask. It's just like,
I thought they did a pretty good job. I saw
and
it.
They, yeah.
And I thought it was pretty good.
Yeah, I mean, it's not like a fun movie. It's, you know, it's harrowing, you know, and it's not the kind of movie that you want to just, you know, watch all the time. It's definitely took me for a very dark ride. But I feel that, like, you know, and we need to talk about Book of Shadows, and I don't dislike Book of Shadows, but I just thought that it wasn't a true sequel to our movie. You know, it's not in the same world as our movie. And I think Adam and Simon's Blair Witch movie was the first real sequel to our movie. You know what I mean? So it was cool. And, you know, Lionsgate, they pat us on, you know, they kind of included us in the team. But Greg and I, we just kind of wanted to just step, you know, give Adam and Simon a room to like do what they wanted to do. You know, like, you don't need anybody looking over your shoulder in that, just, you know, go and do your thing. You know,
I have to say that bit in the last act where the girl is in the tunnel. Man, that got me really. I was fidgeting and
that's not fun.
Yeah, but for my number one is pretty obvious, and it's the Blair Witch Project. It's my favorite. I really talk about it a lot already. But like I said, as someone who has camped, I was a Boy Scout and I camped a lot when I was a teenager. And the film has a way to get to you in how weird and scary it can be to be alone in the woods. I talked about the setup. I didn't mention Mary Brown, the interview with Mary. That's such a great moment. I think it's probably one of my favorite parts of the film. It's so weird and so eerie and so, I love it.
It's so, again, it's another thing of just like something lining up perfectly. you know, casting, because we were, you know, we had this character, Mary Brown, who had seen the Blair Witch when she was little, and we're trying to find, we went to some couple people and we auditioned them, and they just seemed like there was just something missing. And then we met Patty, who ended up playing Mary Brown. We met her. She was actually came out to PA for us, because she was a student at Montgomery College, where I went to school. And we put up some flyers about, like, you know, people needing help. We need help. And she was the only one that called us. And she was just really, you know, unique looking and very interesting. And we were like, oh my God, this is so cool. And then we went to her house and we were like, oh my God, this would be perfect. The perfect place for Mary Brown to live. Yeah. And and it was great. I mean, you know, it was one of those things, again, where, like, everything just lined up and you know, it worked. And you know, even, like, again, man, like her, most of her interview is out of focus. And there's, when we first saw it, we're like, oh my God, it's out of focus. Ah, oh, what the hell, you know? And then once you start watching it, you're like, man, it actually kind of helps a little bit. Like,
yeah.
It's like a weird, like, the camera can't focus on her and the close-ups and stuff. So it just gives it a, you know, it gives it again, like one of those things, the serendipity of Blair Witch. Yeah. Again, even then, you know,
that's not only. I had read that, and that's one of the things that I wanted to mention when I spoke about so many things that were fortuitous, because I had heard something about that, about the focus thing, and yeah, it definitely worked.
Yeah. I mean, even like, you know, when they come up to her house and she has the stick, the little gate, like, that was her gate. Like, there was no, we didn't do any production design in that house, in that place. Like, so the idea that, like, she didn't know about the stick man, or, you know, we never gave her the script. We just gave her, like, her backstory. It was just, you know, again, it's those crazy things of, like, what the hell is, there's a stick man, like a stick gate in her house? Like, what the hell is going on here? You know, it was like things that even if you would have written it, you wouldn't have come up with that. You know what I mean? So again, it was just, you know, and she was cool, and, you know, we were very happy that she went along with it, and she, you know, turned out great.
Yeah, definitely. I think it's one of the best touches in the film. And to hear all of that that you say about what that was actually her house, that was actually her gate, that is, it just adds so much to it. It's brilliant.
Yeah. No, it's crazy, man.
Okay, so that's our loot. That's our 5 of 5 great found footage films for all of us to watch. I just wanted to mention, we talked a bit about it in the game, but I think The Bay is a really underrated found footage film that should be mentioned more often. And one I saw recently, Creep. I thought it was pretty.
I've heard good things about it. Yeah, I gotta check it out.
Any other that you just want to throw around?
There's so many good things. Like, I like, sometimes on Netflix, you look, like, sort of for found footage stuff, and you find these little things, and sometimes it's funny because you're like, oh my God, it's kind of doesn't work, you know, but other times that it's still very effective. And I like the, I like that people are still out there experimenting with it. You know what I mean? Yeah.
It's definitely something that a subgenre that lends itself to that, to experimenting, and it, just like it did, and it worked great for you. Another thing that I went out and found is the thoughts of some of my listeners on their favorite found footage films. So I just wanted to share this with you. My friend Darren Lundberg from Nostalgiacast, he said, "The Blair Witch Project will always take a place in my heart. Yeah, Cannibal Holocaust and The Last Broadcast came first, but Blair Witch's legendary marketing push made it an event that I had the pleasure of participating in from the start. A communal experience like no other." I definitely agree. Nice. My friend Tim Dougherty agreed with him and said, "My thoughts as well. Seeing it opening weekend in the theaters was wild. I'm pretty skeptical, but was still pulled into the possibility there was some authenticity. Of course, with the rise of social media, this could never happen now. Everything is ruined before it comes out."
Yeah, true.
My friend Jerry Sarabia at Jerry at the Movie, he said, "Blair Witch scores high, as well as the little-known The Last Broadcast, the latter being more of a thriller. I suppose my favorite might be Hell House LLC." I haven't seen it.
Yeah, I haven't seen that one either. I've heard good things about that one, too.
Tom Bodden at TomBodden19 said, "Both Surf's Up and Chronicle are grossly underrated. Not perfect, but definitely underrated, and I won't stand for that."
Yeah, I like Chronicle. It was really interesting.
Yeah, it's those, because so many people associate found footage with horror.
Yeah.
Things like End of Watch or
Chronicle. Even Surf's Up. Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, and that's Surf's what... Up, yeah. And when we were... And even, you know, like, look, even before Blair Witch, you know, Spinal Tap is you know, kind of yeah. a cousin of Blair Witch. And really, when we were making Blair Witch, that was like the only fake documentary that we had ever heard of. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like there weren't too many of them, you know, that actually became popular, you know? So, you know, yeah, man, you can use that tool to do anything. And I love how they've been channeling, you know, the superhero movies and, you know, monster movies and, you know, just, I love how it's kind of, you know, channeled out. And even, you know, not that I don't think Blair Witch had anything to do with The Office, but even The Office has, you know, it's a documentary film crew. Like, I just think it's just, you know, it's basically, you know, molding narrative with documentary. And I think it was done way before us, and it's still very effective now, you know?
Yeah. People are still finding ways to, again, like I said, mold it and twist it in different ways. So it's definitely there to stay. My friend Daniel Jose, Daniel_Jose, said Cloverfield, the atmosphere that is given to the city, the mystery that surrounds the monster, and the sound of everything that surrounds them makes it one of the best found footage, in my opinion. With Chronicle, Dane DeHaan killed that role. Plus, Cannibal Holocaust seems like one of the best. Lake Mungo scared me to death. Another found footage movie that almost no one talks about is Earth to Echo. Haven't seen it.
I've never seen that one either.
Lindsay Washburn, she said, Creep, starring Mark Duplass. It's creepy, weird, and strangely intimate. The sequel, Creep 2, is worth a watch as well. It's pretty good, yeah. Jason from the Force Five podcast, he said, Deadstream. I haven't seen it, but he said it's about this social media deadbeat that wants to reawaken his career and start to record something in a haunted house or something, and things go not the way he expected. So,
Right.
And finally, Film Shake, the 90s movie pod, they said, what about when found footage is suddenly inserted into a non-found footage narrative? If that counts, then this moment from The Descent. And she put the big review when the girl was with the camera. Obviously, that's not found footage, but that specific scene is so great.
That's great. Yeah, beautiful. It's one of my favorite moments.
Yeah. Okay, Eduardo, it's time to hit stop and leave this footage in the woods. So why don't you tell us, what are you working on? What are your plans for the future? You already mentioned a couple of things that you're working on.
Yeah, I mean, I'm, you know, the strike, you know, stopped everything. But in January, I'm going back to LA to do a TV show called Hysteria, which was, you know, delayed because of the strikes. And then, and hopefully the plan is after that, I'm going to go prep a new movie, my first feature in like 10 years. And then we are also doing these low budget horror movies here in Frederick. We just released one called The Jester. And then I'm also part of the latest anthology movie that I'm a part of is called Satanic Hispanics. And it just came out last week on video. And it was a blast to do, just really talented filmmakers and just, again, all kinds of flavors of different kinds of movies, you know, horror, like scary stuff and gross stuff and funny and, you know, just violent and, you know, it's just all over the silly and just kind of stupid and smart. And it's a great, great movie, great ride. And we always got other things going on, but that's kind of where I'm at right now. And just trying to enjoy the Thanksgiving this week and then, you know, and get ready to start working again in 2024.
Definitely. Will we ever see Hard Love come to fruition?
I mean, man, I hope not. No, you know, I mean, I've, you know, it's... No, I don't think so. I mean, there are bits. I think there's always bits of Heart of Love that'll, you know, that come out in other places and, you know, things like that. But no, I don't think that movie's meant to be seen, to be made. It was like, I don't know. It was just, you know, no. Let's just say no and leave it at that.
Okay. And where can people find you on the internet? If anybody wanted to get in touch with you, if you want to share it.
Hacks and Films on Facebook is a group that's, you know, HAXAN Films. And that's kind of where I post every day and, you know, kind of talk to people. And I'm also very active at the, I think it's called the Official Blair Witch Project fan page on Facebook. I go there every day and just kind of answer questions and just kind of, and I love like hanging out with the fans and there's so much love, you know, given to this film. And it just makes me, you know, I want to be part of that community. You know what I mean? And then, you know, that's probably the best place to reach me. I'm also on Twitter and Instagram on Sanchez on the mic, but I don't really do the X and Instagram thing. I'm not really into it that much. I don't know how to do it. But again, I'm on there. And so, you know, it's I try to be active on social media, but I'm not like, there's always this thing of like, why the hell would people want to see this? You know, like, who cares, you know? And it always stops me. But, you know, I do post and, you know, so I think that's those are the best places to kind of keep track of what the hell I'm doing.
Yeah, that's how we got in touch with you. So definitely it's...
Yeah, it works.
Eduardo, it's been a real pleasure. It's really an honor as a fan of your work. So I'm definitely glad that you came on the Loot and talked with us. So we wish you the best in your career and a loot of great things to you.
Yeah, man. No, thanks for having me, man. It was a lot of fun. And it's always good to talk about, you know, Blair Witch, but it's also good to talk about other stuff. And, you know, it was a good interview, man. I really enjoyed it.
Thank you. Again, it's an honor. And I hope that we talked about, I didn't want to talk only about Blair Witch. I wanted to talk about...
Yeah, no, I mean, and I appreciate that. You know, it's like, I don't get tired of talking about Blair Witch. You know, to me, it's like, if people want to talk to me about Blair Witch, why wouldn't I want to talk to them about it? You know, so I feel very fortunate that people are still interested in it, you know, after all these years. So,
okay. So hope you have a great night and
yeah, man.
And talk later again.
Thanks, man. See you, brother.
Take care.
Bye.
I just want to apologize to all our listeners and to Eduardo for the delay in this episode. I'm sorry to everyone. I was very naive. I am so, so sorry for everything that has happened. Because despite of what anyone says, it is my fault. Because it is my podcast. And I insisted. I insisted on everything. I insisted to record in November. I insisted that we weren't late. I insisted that I could edit it on time. Everything had to be my way. And this is where we've ended up. And it's all because of me that we're here now. Delayed and with no downloads. What is that? I'm scared to close the app. I'm scared to open it. I'm scared to look at the stats. The podcast's gonna die out here.